All right, we're here with Adrian Marinescu again, a kernel developer, and your specialty is the heap and other lower level issues.
Some of the stuff.
So what are you working on these days? We've had you before.
Most of the time these days I'm working on the heap manager. I used to be more involved in other components such as, you know, the local procedure LPC and OJF management as well, but for Vista a lot of the, of my cycles were in the heap manager. There are like quite significant changes in the heap manager for performance, for security.
Excellent.
You know, the customers are going to see those.
So last time we had you on Channel 9, you talked about the object manager, as you mentioned you used to work on it, so now it's heap manager. Can you briefly describe what the heap manager is, what the heap subsystem is all about?
Sure.
As brief as you can.
Right. So, so the heap manager basically allocates memory for user mode applications. To store objects, structures, data, and it's a generic, you know, infrastructure that that the operating system offers for applications. And I can lay down a little bit like what is the position and the heap and how the heap management does. Can I ask you?
Sure.
Okay. So if you look from the programming perspective. Here you have like let's actually stack that line here. Here you have like user mode, and here you have like the kernel mode.
Yep.
And here you have like application space, right? These are like
the things that we use.
Yeah.
Right. Gotcha.
Right. Like I don't know, Internet Explorer and services, whatever. And most applications actually talk to allow the Win32 subsystem, where you have some. Functions such as heap alloc. I have a pretty ugly writing, so
that's okay. Heap alloc.
Heap alloc, heap free, and a lot of other functions that start with the heap prefix.
Okay.
These are very thin layers on top of the heap management. Mm-hmm. In user mode, we have the most of the heap implementation in NTDLL. And we have like RTL functions, starts with RTL, such as RTL allocate heap, RTL free heap, and so on, RTL create heap. Mm-hmm. Basically, the user mode heap management actually does some memory manager for small blocks, for larger blocks that come from kernel mode with virtual alloc and functions like that.
Okay.
There is also some option to have a heap in a section, like in a map section as well, and it can be shared between kernel and user mode. That's kind of like a very rare usage. Also for the applications perspective, you have the C runtime libraries, which is malloc free, where some implementation actually goes directly to the anti-heap manager. There are also like a thin wrapper on top on the heap management. Some of them they have like a very specialized heap implementation, such as the small block heap that's on NMSBCRT.
Okay.
So basically, this is kind of like the area that I'm going to focus on this part in the NTDLL. Okay. And as I said, the functions that come on top on this are very thin wrappers on top on the.
Okay. So what you're saying is that the heap manager runs in user mode.
Right.
In NTDLL.
Right.
And
most of the structure, most of the infrastructure.
Most of the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about real quickly for people who don't know. I mean, what is the heap? Like, why is it called a heap? Do you just throw objects on it in some sort of
kind of
versus like a stack, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the heap manager, should just answer like the very quick, simple question, such as someone wants to allocate, let's say, a buffer of 20 bytes, and you have to the heap manager is supposed to find the 20 bytes contiguous space somewhere in the memory in the address space, and return to the user.
Great.
And there are like a lot of versions and algorithms to implement heap management. And for every single one, you can find like some, you know, some pluses, some positive sides, some have some negative side, and it really depends a lot of the application patterns. We also have to consider that lately the, you know, the usage pattern actually changed. So if you look back, like, you know, like 10, 15 years, the application used to allocate, you know, much less memory than we have today. So, you know, we had computer, I don't know, like few hundred megabytes now, few megabytes that were shared.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, gigabytes computer, now we have high-end servers which have much more than this. And if we look at the 64-bit platform, we also see like even higher increase in the memory usage. Because also the limitation of the address space of being 2 gig or 3 gig sometimes is no longer a problem for 64-bit. So the heap management actually needs to adapt to those changes in the you know, in the usage and for the application, so that will perform faster and will scale much better on multiprocessors. And as you know, lately the industry tends to have multiple chips on the same multiprocessor on the machine. And on the other side, the anti-heap manager also works on a very with some changes anyway, some on CE devices and small devices. So basically, you have to see here like the broader scale where this heap manager needs to, you know, to fit in.
Absolutely.
So from small devices to high-end servers.
Which is the case for the kernel in general, right?
Yeah.
It's a general-purpose kernel.
Right.
Fantastic.
So
so let's talk about specifically the great work that you've done in Vista with relation to the heap manager. In other words, you've mentioned it's more secure. Can we talk about the security angle of the heap for a little while?
Sure.
Because I know that that's been a popular security circles anyway.
Right, that's a very popular subject. So actually, I need to provide a little bit some background about the security.
Sure.
Okay, so like a few years back, I don't remember exactly the years, I think like somewhere like 2002, 2001, that kind of time frame. There were like some well known to exploit heap vulnerabilities, which is like, let's say, if you have an application running in Windows and has a buffer overrun. There were ways for hackers to take advantage of that buffer overrun and execute random or arbitrary code on the machine. Back then, it was a very there was some version of a very reliable method, which is so the heap manager keeps the blocks in a, you know, contiguous area, and each block has a header of 8 bytes. I'm just talking about the 32-bit platform here, right?
Okay.
A header, 8 bytes header here. And here is the, you know, the actual user data that, you know, the user holds on. And then is the next allocation, also has like 8 byte header and so on. And on 3 blocks, the heap manager saves in the first 2 pointer, the forward link and the backward link that the heap manager uses to manage the 3 blocks. So when someone frees an allocation, the heap manager uses this tool and insert in one, actually multiple lists in the heap manager depending on the size. Later on, if someone requests from a similar size, may look up on that list and find the block.
Okay.
The exploits back then were using like these two, these pointers to write an arbitrary value, an arbitrary value at an arbitrary address. So if the program, let's say, had like 16 bytes buffer overrun, so that, you know, it overwrites over the header and this four pointer, right after returning this pointer, it may cause, let's say, this function, this buffer to be released or be allocated, and cause this arbitrary write. And so this basically is kind of is sort of like an implementation. So if you have like multiple blocks. You have like the forward link, this is like a backward link. This is the next block. So the forward points here, and the backward point to another block in the same list.
Okay.
This also has like a forward and also backward link. So basically, writing these two pointer can removing this entry from the list is going to cause to write at the forward pointer this value.
This is basically, except for this part here, you're just describing a classic buffer overrun vulnerability.
Right.
It was injecting code into a running process.
Right. So it was basically was some vulnerability in the application that was using the heap manager, but the exploit actually takes advantage of the heap algorithms to execute random code.
Okay.
It's not quite random. Anyway, controlled by the hacker.
You got it.
So
random to the system anyway. But all code is random to the system.
Right.
Okay.
So now in several RTM and then in XP, SP2, several checks are done on this list. So basically, before we do the removal from the list, we validate whether the previous block. So this has to point like a previous block, and the forward pointer for this previous block has to point to this one, and the same the forward link has to point to the next block, and the backward pointer has to point to this one as well. So we validate whether we have this round trip backward, forward, and go back to the same block, and the same for the forward link.
Okay.
And. This basically prevents writing given value from the attack, unless you have this these pointers to point back the same value. This was actually quite efficient back then, but there was like a second level of vulnerability exploits where. Matkonova reported like about a year something ago.
Okay.
Another way to cause like an unaligned list to bypass this check. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of two steps attempt. And beside that was like another mitigation done in the header. Where back then I added like 8 bits canary, like a random value, pseudo random value based on the address, based on some other fields here. With that we detect whether the header has been compromised. So an attacker has to basically put the right value here besides this. However, this is not very often check, and 8 bits doesn't offer too much protection anyway.
Okay.
So wasn't that effective. So this kind of creates like more of the soft one for Vista.
Okay.
For all the attempts, I said the first time was very reliable exploit. Mm-hmm. After that was closed, another attempt was to use the leukocytes. And the leukocytes are simple non-blocking single linked list, and only the forward link, so a block in the leukocyte has the same header and has a link to the next block in the same leukocyte for the same size. This is not used, and this is whatever was the previous content.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, a hacker can overrun the header and put a value here, which is going to be a next allocation that is going to be returned by the heap manager. Okay. So let's say this was in bucket of let's say 32 bytes. And for some reason, the exploit knows that the next allocation is going to have to be 32 bytes. It can, overrun right here like a value, let's say foo. And the next time an allocation is going to be done, this foo is going to pop up in the head of the list, and the second time is going to be returned to the user. So basically, in multiple steps, an exploit can have an arbitrary write of this address. So once it's done to the user, the exploit can
use that allocation to write something there.
Absolutely.
So this was like the second with the involving locusides. And in Vista, things change a little bit for various reasons. So one of the reasons is performance, and I mentioned has some implication in security as well. The heap manager by default had trouble scaling at a high number of processors and configures high number of processors, it was a new front-end heap added a few years ago in server SP1, actually in server RTM, and then it was in a server SP1 as well, this low fragmentation heap that was added later allows like scalability on multiprocessor system very, very well, up to a particular size, such as 16K. However, an application needs to explicitly enable this low fragmentation heap, and require obviously recompile the application and some testing done with this new heap manager. The constraint with the heap management changes there is, the trade-off here is like the application compatibility on one side, mm-hmm. Then you have the security on one side and have the performance on the other side. Mm-hmm. And heap management, like large-scale heap management changes, has to keep all three in a very good balance. We have to keep up the application compatibility. We have to enable better performance of application, large-scale applications. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, we also want to make less of a target for exploits, mm-hmm. and make it difficult for if some bug is there, some application, to make much difficult to actually take advantage of that.
So now, if I could just interject, the interesting. So it's kind of an interesting dance that you guys do, in the sense that you have to improve security, to increase security by actually doing more processing.
Right.
And at the same time, you have to increase performance, which of course can be adversely affected by the amount of processing you do. So you have to strike that nice balance.
Right.
And that must be pretty challenging from an engineering and algorithm perspective for you.
Right. That's one. And actually another interesting thing is from a security perspective, let's say you have someone having a buffer overrun, mm-hmm. and obviously from a security standpoint, you really want to block that application. You prefer to to not allow running or crash or whatever, instead of having an exploit running code on your machine, stealing mm-hmm. data information and so on. On the other side, there are some applications, like very old applications somewhere in the field, they are not so visible from security standpoint from exploits, but you want them running to keep the hard compatibility of the Windows. Mm-hmm. So what is and may not be even exploitable. Let's say that application never faces the net, is like a very well contained environment. Mm-hmm. For those applications, like a very dramatic change for security perspective. It may decrease significantly the compatibility. So they have to support, they have to maintain, and they have to create a new version for the next version of Windows.
Yes.
I found actually the application compatibility bar kind of quite difficult, more and more difficult to meet than the one in the security and performance.
I can imagine.
And. So now going back to this thing for
compatibility is hard.
Yeah,
it's something we all take for granted. When we upgrade from OS to OS, right. Yet our apps still work.
Right,
it's very important because you don't want to throw away an asset that I've spent time making.
Exactly.
Just because I'm upgrading my OS. So yeah, compatibility, and that's incredibly challenging from an engineering perspective,
right.
As you just mentioned. So.
Right.
Good point.
And it's even more interesting on applications that are host. Like host other Arduino plugins or other code, like external code,
uh-huh.
Where you try to make like a policy, like a very strong policy of the application, being like very secure. On the other side, you have something running the same address space or the same process, very old plugin, no longer serviced, and mm-hmm. It's very tough. How can you find the line to actually, have all this scenario enabled?
Absolutely.
Or most of them.
Good point.
So now, for Vista, As I said, the changes actually came a lot from the performance perspective. We wanted to have application performing faster and by default. So we detect a lot of performance or fragmentation problem at runtime, and automatically enable part of LFH, low fragmentation heap on particular sizes. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to discuss in detail all the algorithms about that. It's essentially we try to find the best performance we can get to the lowest memory footprint, and be open for highly scalable end server or even like, you know, client machines, which currently may have like two processors these days anyway. Mm-hmm. Part of that was taking the Lucas side out of the front end heap and using the, you know, the base and the heap and the low fragmentation heap dynamically activated based on some criteria we found at runtime. And that, to begin with, kind of eliminated one of the surface area from the previous chain of exploits, like the Lucas site.
Okay.
Low fragmentation heap is, at least to now to date, it's much difficult to be exploited. So it has the header. So every block also has a header.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the header is like a
pointer.
Yeah, it's running out. So this part of the header, it's basically an encoded value to some list head for the allocations.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to, let's say you have this block allocated, you want to release it, to free it. In order to retrieve the, to make it successful free, you need to retrieve this, region of the subsegment, this called subsegment, where the list head for this this block is going to be. And this is an encoded value based on the address, is based on the heap and some other, you know, random value.
Now, can I just ask you, from somebody who doesn't think, you know, in these terms a lot?
Yeah.
The header is actually is being used by the heap manager algorithms to keep track of the memory.
Right.
When it's going to be released, where it's stored across the disk, or in the RAM memory, not disk.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to just reiterate that. It's a way for you to understand what keep track of the pieces of memory you've thrown on the pile.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the reason for that. And we try to have like a double user to use this in also in the way that we can detect like something, some attempt of corruption or something happened there. So we kind of use this as a stamp for the header.
Okay.
And in LFH, even in the server SP1, this was encoded. Mm-hmm. And there were attempts to actually go around this encoding and put a proper value here so that it's not causing a crash.
Mm-hmm.
But today I'm not aware of any way around this. So I just keep like as a very much difficult to, you know, to exploit than anything else so far.
Okay.
And so now in in Vista, a lot of the blocks, at least on the high, like large heaps,
mm-hmm.
Are likely to have this LFH enabled, at least for the blocks that are most commonly used, which means like automatically you have a higher level of integrity check on the heap when it's let's say released. Beside that, you have. Sorry, I just said something.
No problem.
Okay, I'll ask you this one for a while.
Sure.
Besides this low fragmentation heap, in the regular anti heap in Vista, has the header of the block has also changed. It was modified and has some level of encoding, I think similar with the number of bits that are encoded in the low fragmentation heap.
Mm-hmm.
I think because there are some values which are kind of exclusive. So if you have like one value, you can deduct whether the other one is there. So you kind of have difficult to do the math to actually see exactly how many bits are used.
Mm-hmm.
since not all values are correct and not all combinations are correct, so you can basically have like aliases of the same good header checksum. Mm. But in essential it has also some there's like some level of encrypting of the size of the internal structures, and the heap manager is going to to decode and access those fields every time this block is being touched, such as for free, or when you free a block, when you try to collapse the neighbors, the neighbor block, the all neighbor blocks also needs to be decoded to see if this is like a free block, or it's like what is the size, if you kind of the collapsing the blocks makes sense or not. Mm-hmm. This becomes actually a very common operation in the heap manager algorithm, and there is a pair for that, but I'm going to talk a little bit about this as well.
Okay.
But the advantage is it's very tough to actually have a buffer overrun and go like closer to this block and not noticing the heap manager. There is a very good plus on top on this for development and for debuggability. Mm-hmm. The corruptions and arbitrary writes are much earlier detected these days. Even on free build on retail bits, we used to have like page heap before. Actually, we don't have that. Honestly, I think that's the best problem debug functionality. However, even on free builds, we can detect a lot of the heap problems.
So that's for the people who don't understand out there. There's the check build, and then there's the free build. So you're talking about different builds that we use internally.
No. Actually, the check build it was not about the check build. We have with the application verifier, which is externally available.
Uh-huh.
So the developer can enable a functionality called page heap, which essentially, the basic idea back then was to allocate the memory at the end of pages and have the next page protected or no access or like the not committed, so that if someone tries to write beyond the buffer, is going to get an access violation instantly on that position. So it's very easy to detect heap corruptions.
Okay.
There's a light version of that where you don't allocate at the end of the pages because of the memory footprint. Sometimes it's not really applicable. So you have like a very high, large server having an allocation. Let's say it buys taking like two pages of the address space is like it's very high footprint. And I saw cases where this was not really was not easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
So there is like a version of that called like light page heap where. We have like some header checksums and things like that. You can detect on spot the corruption, but you can detect sometimes later like a particular location overrun. And now embedding this part of in part of the header kind of provides a similar functionality with this on retry build and without almost no cost compared to like other retry feature.
Okay.
And having this detected earlier has this advantage that facilitates debugging and spotting the actual problem much earlier.
Excellent.
I was talking about this. Now, so for the performance, as I said, there's like some cost to this header encoding, and obviously the goal was to have the automatic tuning. Detecting like part of the very common the common operation that happened in the heap manager, and divert them to the low fragmentation heap.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone, let's say, allocates like consistently some size and has contention, let's say when try to allocate a particular size block size,
mm-hmm.
The heap manager is going to detect that one and going to enable the bucket LFH low fragmentation heap bucket for that size.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the performance is going to ramp up much better.
Okay.
And this actually has also some security implication as well. I think to the benefit of them, up to a point I can tell which one is. So the idea is like some of the exploits, like after server, like after XP SP2. were brute force attacks. So first attempt may get wrong because, you know, you couldn't put the kanai in the first place, you know, the cookie in the first place from the mm-hmm. header. They might have to attend multiple times, or, you know, like the next block was like a Lucas side block and so on. So they have to try multiple times until they get a successful execution. And the thing with this, if they try the same Vista, attempting to do the same operation multiple times actually changes the algorithms. So they actually may cause other problems. Mm-hmm. Now, the drawback on this, I had a very good question for someone, is like, can someone actually find like a spot in some algorithms and trigger that one? And I think that's perfectly possible. The way that this is evaluated is today is that the low fragmentation heap header seems to be like much difficult to go through. So actually, moving toward a low fragmentation heap seems to be a better choice today.
Okay.
But you know, this is like a cat and a mouse game. So you know,
somebody's going to find something.
Yeah, someone's going to find something, like another way to go around this, and like. I expect to be much harder than before. It's going to be harder and harder. And actually, already, like I heard, like from hacker communities, that they tried to see other ways. Some would even give up, like trying to do some heap exploits. Try to find other ways to you know.
So that actually brings up a good question. In the course of when you're developing your algorithms, right, for the new Vista heap management infrastructure, are you working occasionally with people to hack what you're doing? Like, look, I just implemented this new feature, try to bust it. Do you have that sort of interaction with people around the company, at least, like with security teams? You show them, here's my new algorithm, here's the changes I've made, let's see if you can break it. Do you have that kind of game?
Right, so I have some this kind of game with like inside the company.
Uh-huh.
And also from outside the company, I also have some other contacts. I'm not here like Matt Conover. Mm-hmm. He was very actively, you know, letting me know, like, you know, he found like some way around the heap exploitation, and I found very useful his feedback.
Excellent.
Now the Vista stuff, you know, is like not. I mean, was out part of it in part of the beta. One is not entirely like as is today,
uh-huh.
And I don't think was really too much evaluation outside Microsoft. I think some people actually looked very, very from very high level on this. I don't think it was very
So in beta 2, you have a bunch of your work.
Yeah, so beta 2 has around a bunch of work, and obviously everything I said here is it may change or may not change, because, you know, as I said, we have this constrained application compatibility with security and performance, and we might have to, you know, scale back, move something around, and, you know, try to get the best balance on this.
Absolutely.
It's not like, you know, like a product announcement or anything right now.
Absolutely.
It's just, you know, try to say like what is the work in progress for this.
Excellent. Let me ask you this. Since you run in user mode, well, actually, it wouldn't even matter. I mean, in other words, you're not a kernel component.
No.
So theoretically, you can add updates to your DLL if need be on an existing platform, right?
Yeah, right.
But it's, of course, it's a compatibility and all.
Right.
It's not something you want to do.
Right.
I understand.
Right. Well, the thing with this mitigation is like, it's a lot of abstraction done, like better abstraction done out to the you know, accessing the fields and the data for internal algorithms. So we have a lot of flexibility for Vista now to change it at run, in updates or you know, from version to versions, a lot of the internals. So I think this is a very good value as well to kind of keep up with like part of the, you know, the exploit attempts to go around the heap mitigations.
Now, just so from the terms of being a developer on this, what's some of the biggest challenges for you, in the sense that, I mean, you're going to have so many different processes wanting to use your algorithm simultaneously, right? I mean, you're the de facto heap allocator, deallocator.
But
what's that from an engineering perspective? This must be challenging.
If we set aside the compatibility problems,
sure.
The main issue is really the performance. How can you get the best performance for all these scenarios? Because you don't have a widespread of application usage patterns of allocation patterns and memory usage, so it has to scale from like very small heap to large heaps, multiprocessor, multithreads, and so on. So that's the challenging part. So the performance is basically the most significant in that perspective. Uh-huh. When you go to the application compatibility, this actually adds a lot more to this, to the problems we have to solve. So we have to think like this is like a common, usage or how can allow this application to run, but also enhance the security.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now you work. Are you doing work with the memory manager? You communicate with the memory manager?
You mean the kernel mod?
Yes.
It's like very limited.
Okay.
We just ask for like a large amount of memory,
and then you just
manage it inside, right?
Okay.
And for blocks of over 500K, all the allocation are directed to the memory manager. We just keep track of these allocations so that I can free them when the heap is destroyed. But we don't do
so. Too what's much what? On that. I'm going to ask a naive question because I want to. So what's the difference between like what you're doing and what a garbage collector would do? Right. You're allocating. The difference is that me as a programmer, I can tell you when to remove my stuff from the heap, and you'll do it. Right. I'm just trying to ask, because you use the term memory management on so many different levels. I want to make sure we differentiate between what you're saying, right? You're basically an abstraction layer to what's happening, sort of. So in other words, you ask the memory manager for a bunch of memory,
right.
And then you then allocate that, and then I, as an application writer up here in user mode, work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, allocate this. And you do all the business of ensuring that you allocate it in a contiguous way, and then you provide what I need, and then I tell you I don't need any more, and you take care of it, right?
Right.
Is that pretty much what's happening?
Right. But you explicitly need to tell me when you don't need the memory.
But you are. So you're basically a memory manager.
Yeah, for example. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So.
I just wanted to go off into outer orbit, but it's an interesting question because I think about clearly I know what a garbage collector is and I know how it works, and so you allocate an object, you don't have to think about it anymore. It does the really hard work for you in terms of ensuring that it's going to be around when you need it, and then you still have to understand how memory works. But the point I'm trying to make is you take care of memory. Very good. Okay.
So now
let's talk about it.
So if I to kind of put in the perspective how the memory manager kind of improved by default now in Vista.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of like some graph. So this is like the operation per second. So the bigger the greater. So we have a number of threads here. And let's say if you look at the default heap manager that was, that was shipped by default in server SP1. Let's say this is like one thread. You get, let's say, for a location over like 1K, you get something like that. So as the number of threads increase and you have a large number of processors, so I assume like you have like the number of processors increasing as well, the scalability was actually negative. And even the Lucas size was negative because of the cache collisions. So the Lucas size were sharing the same cache line for multiple processors. So this was like kind of like very estimate graph, but it's kind of like that. If you go beyond the Lucas size domain, this actually goes something like that much early on. So here you have the contention cost. You have to pay here the coalescing cost, which is even present on single threaded.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like for, let's say, over 1K on 32-bit machine, and this is K, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is like below 1K on a 64-bit machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the
The Vista Heap Manager, so by default, because it detects a lot of the, you know, the contentions and the problems such as fragmentation at runtime, the performance kind of goes something like that. So it goes linearly up with the number of processors, let's say, just for the sake of, you know, of making the point. Let's say here's the number of processors you have. Let's say you have like four processors, you have four threads here. This is basically the point where you can scale more than linear, because like there's no place to, you know, to run.
Yeah.
So it kind of stays steady. Mm-hmm. The performance here is pretty much let's say four times in this case times performance like here. So it's like almost either scalability. There is, however, this gap here, which is like on single threaded. It could be, depending on architecture, depending on scenario and some optimization, it may be between 5 to 10% slower on a single threaded applications in compared to Lucas site. Basically this is the cost if one for the security, because the Lucas site has, if you think about the issues with the Lucas site, added more security as possible also to Lucas site. But the performance was a little bit down because of that, so we tried to do some measurement of this as well.
Okay.
However, once you move to that point, it's going to be much better, regardless the size of the block, as long as it's below the limit of the low fragmentation here.
Mm-hmm.
This scenario is quite common on high-end servers. And we saw that before, and when they look low fragmentation heap, that they benefit from the from this highly scalable. And the advantage is that these days they don't have to do anything about that. We just run as fast as possible, as far as the heap concern, on Vista.
So you're saying this is more performant, huh?
Yeah.
You're not in marketing.
No.
I'm just playing.
No, it's not. You know, I'm just trying to put
this,
like that.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now another thing that was a little bit interesting in server in FP, I mean Prevista, was there some patterns that could cause fragmentation, and the recommendation was to switch to low fragmentation heap, which switched to different memory algorithms. That was more appropriate for like large heaps, mm-hmm. and a particular distribution. So sometimes you can see there are some benchmarks which kind of exploit this pattern in the anti heap, and because they take this at runtime, we have factors of improvement of like 100x sometimes on the
wow.
on the on some patterns on the memory footprint and the costs of allocations.
Uh-huh.
And very interesting in this scenario is application that leak. So leaking memory sometimes can actually accentuate the fragmentation factors, because holds like long-term allocation embedded with the short allocations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the space cannot be reclaimed, cannot be coalesced, it cannot be reused for some other locations. Right. And the Vista heap is much more resilient to those. It's not like, you know, encouraged to have leaks, but it's more like it's more resilient.
How is that?
Because once a site becomes very popular, it's actually it's allocated along with the other similar size blocks in the low fragmentation heap. And the fragmentation model is completely different than the first fit we have in a regular anti heap, and that those blocks don't get coalesced, and they can be used for the same size as well.
Okay.
And other blocks that have like arbitrary larger size in the anti heap manager, that goes to the regular anti heap,
uh-huh.
Will have the opportunity to coalesce with adjacent block and so on.
Wow.
So as a model, it's more resilient to those leaks. But obviously, as I said, we don't want to encourage leaks. But
yeah.
It's more resilient to that. But there are some scenarios where we have applications have logging or have long term allocations by design,
mm-hmm.
and this fits in the same category. So like.
So for example, a service that's always running.
Right, server that's always running and keep part of the allocations.
For sure.
For some reason, for a long time.
So can you, at your level, can you detect when a memory, can you detect when a memory leak is happening? How could you do that?
No, we can't really detect it. No, we don't detect this at runtime. It's just the way algorithms can tune themselves to enable some, a better memory efficiency in some scenarios. Mm-hmm. We obviously cannot detect leaks, but at runtime, it's actually we have some tools to enable detecting, actually helping application developers detect leaks. Mm-hmm. There is like some question mark around this because the algorithm is looking for busy blocks not referencing the process and may not necessarily be leaks because some people encode pointers to blocks, so mm-hmm. we can't find the reference. They might be in kernel mode for some drivers and so on.
What if it's from a different thread?
That's fine. No, it's just if it's not visible in the user mode for some reasons.
Okay.
It comes and goes with several, false positive and false negative situations. So it's not like a deterministic way to say, you have this block, it must be leaked. Yeah. So developer needs to actually analyze the block allocation and can tell whether this is leaked or not. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was very successful. Even it was like some rate of false positive and false negative was very successful to catch a lot of leaked blocks. Mm-hmm. And very, very helpful in development. But excellent. This is a very extensive operation, takes a long time. But it's possible to run on Vista also on DAM files. Mm-hmm. So, if you notice, for instance, your server, your application, it's taking a lot of space, you can just save a DAM file before you restart the machine or restart the service, and you can do analysis offline mm-hmm. on that DAM file.
You have to know what you're doing to give it to a developer.
To a system guy or girl.
You know it. Right. So what I'm hearing from you is that Vista takes more advantage of the low fragmentation heap.
Right.
And therefore guarantees arguably maybe more stability.
Right.
Application stability. In that sense, since you have contiguous, as you were saying earlier, do you think that it has anything to do with it?
No, I think it's tough to put it up against stability because if you think actually detecting some of the programmers early on may actually crash an application earlier if you make the choice to be more secure than current application compatibility. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's this was like one issue that was we considered a long time ago. It's like even in server SP1 and XP SP2, when you detect like a heap corruption or some inconsistent heap state, the default was the last notice out there was that we don't do anything. We try to kind of prevent like doing arbitrary write. Mm-hmm. Because that was like the one that they tried to get, like the hackers tried to get to.
Sure.
But we tried to keep the application alive for the compatibility reasons. Now, in Vista, we have a way for an application to opt in for a model where the application gets terminated right away at the first inconsistency check. And this is very useful, basically, to kind of get out of the way of, the exploits. Mm-hmm. At first time, we detect something. And let's say, I run IE, mm-hmm. I see, something, go to some web page, mm-hmm. Something is crashing, could be like an ActiveX, what could be there. Mm-hmm. But essentially, I'm more confident that if I get a corruption, I'm more confident to just crash the IE right away, mm-hmm. As opposed to just wait for that malicious code to run on my computer and steal password, install rootkit, and whatever.
Yeah.
Right. But
let's talk about that real briefly. How do you detect a heap corruption? What does that mean?
So
what's a heap corruption?
So hip cramp is like it's corrupting of the hips, hip state. Such as the header, that's the most common.
Okay.
And actually, we use the advantage of having the metadata embedded with the allocation data, mm-hmm. with the user data, to have this some sort of like a seal of the block, mm-hmm. right? And every once in a while, for the heap operation, you have to touch some of those heap internal structures. And at first one, we detect that something is inconsistent. If that option is enabled, we terminate the process right away.
Understood. Right. So it's a corruption of the header file.
But the application needs to opt in for this.
Why? Why is that? Why was that policy made?
Because of the application compatibility.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. For example, if you have a policy on the system where any application that's running, if there is heap corruption in its process that's tied to its process that you know of, because you're the one who's managing the heap for that process, kill it. So where does the compatibility issue come in? By opting in. That means that I would have to recompile my Netscape 4 application, for example, to opt in to being closed when it gets hacked. With the heap corruption vulnerability.
Right, which means you need to test it with a new heap. You need to do a lot of extensive testing with that scenario because you have to build it.
Uh-huh.
And make it more up to the application developer to make this decision. Mm-hmm. I think.
But the problem with that, I would argue, is that what if the application developer makes the wrong decision? Like, is it ever a right decision to not crash if there's heap corruption in your process?
Yeah, let's say, I don't know, I have, I'm trying to find an application I have on. I don't know, let's
application
say
application X.
Yeah, let's say I have some video editing who doesn't communicate with anything on the, on the network, or it doesn't even load anything like that. I just want that to run. I don't care if it has, like, corruption and... I don't want to get that destroyed. And I think a lot of applications are not like network facing.
Understood.
And I think it would be probably a good policy to make it like the network facing. But even in that case, maybe there are situations where they have there are some other mitigations in place, particularly that application.
Fair enough.
So.
But like everything we do in Windows, we're trying to make it as general purpose as possible and give people as much flexibility.
Right.
And I'm not in marketing, so I could be accused of it. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you create a really general purpose operating system. You want to make it easy for developers to build what they need to build in the end for consumers to get to use what they want to use and then feed that back to the developer to build what the consumer wants to use, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So you have a hard challenge of making a very general purpose, highly tuned killer machine.
Yep.
So, great. It's great to hear that you've done a lot of great work in Vista.
Yeah,
and I hope to see some performance improvements. Not that XP was that bad. I mean, I have...
No.
I think the kernel rocks in XP. But.
Yeah, no, actually, as I said, I think a lot of the performance that was done in Vista can be seen on a machine with multiple processors.
Okay.
As from the heap perspective, I think the local size for one single processor machines was as good.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I told you before, it was actually even better, like within some margin for single threaded. Single processor machines. There are other things addressed actually for large, even if it's single processor addressed in Vista, where you can scale better for large heaps,
mm-hmm.
and it's much performance better, have better locality on 64-bit platform by default as well.
Okay.
But I don't think from that from like one processor, one of the low end machines is going to be much seen right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the security side that probably is more important from that side.
Sure. Now let me ask you real quickly, since we our audience are mainly developers and architects and stuff. Your algorithms are mainly proxied from Win32, right? So in other words, do I call your stuff directly from my app? Yeah, but I call heap alloc and heap.
Yeah, heap alloc. Just I mean the Win32 has very thin layer, so
it's a very thin layer over you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, as a Windows programmer, I'm usually programming to you via Win32.
Yeah.
Have you added any new APIs in Win32 towards you, or have you done any work in the API department
For the heap management? Well, there are some new class informations for the. You know, like this one to break on failures.
Okay.
But I mean, nothing significant.
Okay.
Nothing.
Just core engineering has gone.
Yeah.
Excellent. Gone up. I mean, more. Good.
Yeah.
Don't want to end on that note. Core engineering is gone. Yeah, right on. Anyway, great to have you on again. Yeah.
Thank
and,
you.
And we'll talk
thank
to you for again that. For the next version of Windows, huh?
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe we'll thank see you. What's new. So actually, since this is beta 2, you're going to want feedback. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd love some feedback from system developers on the work
right.
you've done.
Right.
Found any problems at all?
Right. Or
even good feedback.
Yeah.
All
right. I think we got so far very, very good feedback from beta 1.
Okay.
So this was like where the bulk of the you know the changes were.
Okay.
So I think now even better broader coverage is you know is going to be much. I mean, more helpful for me to get like. Better idea about how they compile and how the performance and all this got together.
Fantastic. So. Well, thank you, Adrian.
Thank you very much.
See you.
Yeah.